I'd like to call to order the Unincorporated Services meeting for the evening of September 28th. Yes. And I'm going to take the roll.
Supervisor Miley.
Here.
Supervisor Brown.
Here.
Okay. And can we have the information for interpretation and for remote participation?
Okay.
Hello, everyone. I am Cindy from International Contact, your language co-host for today. We have Spanish interpreters for this meeting. The Spanish participants will be listening to interpretation on their corresponding channel. The interpretation channel is already created. One moment while I give the instructions in their language. Gracias por asistir a esta reunión. Para las conexiones virtuales, por favor haga clic en la figura del mundito en la barra de tareas que aparece abajo en su pantalla. Haga clic en Interpretación, Interpretation y seleccione ES Español o SP Spanish. Si está usando un teléfono inteligente, haga clic en la parte donde hay tres puntitos. Seleccione Interpretación, Español. Después habrá una parte en la reunión donde podrá hacer comentarios. Simplemente levante la mano y podrá hacer comentarios en español. Everyone who speaks English must go to the English channel. This is very important if you want to hear any Spanish comments interpreted into English. To do that, go to the world icon at the bottom of your screen. Click on the world icon and select English. If you are using a smartphone Zoom app, click on the corner with the three dots and select English. Okay, all of us together go to the world icon and pick English. We ask all panelists to speak slowly so interpreters can keep up with you. If you speak or read too fast, interpretation text will be cut off. This concludes the multi-language instructions. Thank you. I will pass it off to Supervisor Miley.
Tisa, do you want to do the information for remote participation?
Members of the public may participate remotely by following the teleconferencing guidelines posted at https://boardcom/calendar-documents/teleconferencing-guidelines unincorporated services to provide written comment on an item or to raise an issue during public comment. You may send an email to cbs@acgov.org. Please include your name and the agenda item you are speaking on, or if the item falls under public comment. Comments are not read into the record, but will be provided to the board members.
Okay, thank you. So the first item on tonight's agenda, informational item, dealing with our update on language access and interpretation services.
Hi, Supervisor Miley. This is Laura Lloyd from the County Administrator's Office, and I will be giving an update on informational items number one and two. So that is the language access, interpretation services, and transition to hybrid meetings. So starting with language interpretation services, just to give a recap, our office has been working with the Information Technology Department and the Clark Board of Supervisors to assess options for language interpretation standing service for not only unincorporated services meetings, but for all meetings in the unincorporated area. So we have considered YouTube for pre-recorded closed caption viewing in multiple languages, based on the feedback that I got from this committee and participants, community members participating in this committee, is that the pre-recorded meetings did not ultimately meet their needs. Not being able to interact at a live meeting was not a preferred option. So while we may use YouTube for some to post pre-recorded meetings, we realize that that is not an option that we will move forward because it doesn't allow for that live interaction. But that is something that we will use for pre-recorded meetings, just to have a cache of our meetings available for people who want to view them after the fact. We have also, you know, tried to work with our Human Resources Services Department to see if there are bilingual county employees who can assist with language interpretation at meetings. And while that is an option, it's not the most viable option considering short staffing in multiple county departments and having to pull those employees off of their regular assignments to assist. And the fact that I'm sure the interpreters at this meeting will verify interpreting a 3-hour meeting is far different than providing, you know, in-person or over-the-counter interpretation for a short period of time. So while we do have access to some of our bilingual employees to help, we realize that is also not a viable solution. So we have assessed two applications, one from Microsoft, one from Google, that will allow interpretation in multiple languages. And this is live meeting interpretation. And we feel like at least one of these apps is a potential solution. However, as we're using the app, it does not fully integrate with Zoom or Teams. So it will require the meeting attendee to kind of navigate two different apps at the same time. And after some internal discussion, although we feel like this is an option, perhaps down in the future, sometime in the future, once things get ironed out a bit, it wasn't that user friendly for our meeting attendees. We felt like it was just a lot of work for them to have to access two applications at the same time. So ultimately, we are looking for an app that will integrate with Zoom or Teams for a seamless experience. And that isn't out there just yet, or we haven't come across it, but we're still looking. So the recommendation is to continue providing the current service at the unincorporated services meeting. And this will be a standing service, and this will continue until we have figured out what a permanent solution is. And again, we're working on a permanent solution that will not only translate in Spanish, but translate in multiple languages, but it's just not fully baked yet. So in the meantime, we will continue to explore third-party applications, but continue to provide this existing service. And at one of the previous meetings, Supervisor Brown had asked for some feedback or some information on the cost of providing this service at every unincorporated services meeting, and that will be 5 meetings a month, and that is approximately $5,000 a month. So supervisors, as you know, I was scheduled to give an update on both translation and transition to hybrid meetings at your work session yesterday, but given the long day, some items got pushed back to the next work session. So I'm hoping to give a comprehensive update then and get some direction from the full board on whether or not this will be a standing service at every unincorporated area meeting. But in the meantime, we will continue to provide this service for this particular meeting. So just to wrap that all up, we'll continue doing what we're doing because we have explored multiple options for other services and they're just not fully baked yet. Not for lack of trying, but for lack of integration with our meeting technology, which is Zoom and Teams. So that concludes my update on the language access and interpretation services. Oh, one more thing. We do have a solution or a pilot solution for translating meeting agendas into multiple languages. So once I get approval from the full board to roll this out, our information technology department has come up with a kind of a self-service, but relatively easy solution for meeting attendees to go onto the county's website and not only translate agendas in multiple languages, but any other PDF document that's on the website can be translated. So we're ready to roll that out as soon as I give an update and a go from the full board.
Thank you. Let's see if Supervisor Brown has any questions, and then we'll go to the attendees.
Yeah, thank you, Supervisor Miley. So Laura, just so I'm clear, when you said five meetings per month at $5,000, are you counting like the max and unincorporated service committee? Is that when you came up with five?
Yes. So we have Eden MAC, Cacho Valley MAC, Fairview MAC, unincorporated services, and Sunol Citizens Advisory Committee.
So you're saying it's $1,000 per meeting, essentially?
Yes.
About $1,000 per health committee, is that, would that be accurate?
It's approximately $950 to $1,000 for a three-hour meeting, whatever that okay. three-hour meeting is.
Good, okay, all right. That's, so we, you know, at least we know the budget. I mean, we'll have to figure that out, obviously, as a board, but thank you.
You are welcome.
Okay, I don't have any questions at this point. Let's see if there are any speakers from the audience.
Caller, excuse me, caller, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes, Randy. Unmute.
Oh, shoot. You know what? I must have accidentally hit. I think this sounds great, though. Sorry.
Thanks, Randy.
Caller, you have 3 minutes. Carlos? Unmute your mic, Carlos.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. When it comes to translation, I think, you know, because this community is so diverse, not only do we need translation, it's going to become more diverse. So we need to really familiarize ourselves with this process and modernize ourselves with this process, because it's not like we turn it into Southern Iowa. Are we going to get, you know, so we're going to really, not only are we going to need this, we're going to have to really understand that, you know, we're kind of behind times when it comes to this, you know, and especially if we always go to these meetings and say we want to reach this type of the community, we want to reach this type of the community, we don't want the same old people, we want fresh new voices. Well, if you want those fresh new voices, then you need to provide an easy situation for them, where, you know, all this stuff where they need to go click on this, and, you know, or you want to kind of cheapen out and go with closed captions. People, that becomes more difficult for people who we are hoping participate in the situation, you know, so we need to make it easier for them. So again, when it comes to translation, so that way people who, you know, are having problems with English or don't understand English get an equal opportunity. They need this. It's not a want. They need this. And also say that, you know, that quote seems, you know, all the meetings that I've attended to, that seems like a really expensive price for translation. We usually have translation at almost every board meeting that I've been at, and I've never seen a quote that high. So I hope you guys can work out a better deal. This is definitely needed for the community, so that way we can include everybody. And thank you guys for listening to me.
And Carlos, if I can just provide somewhat of a response, I think the board members and other meeting attendees from previous meetings agree that closed caption is not the preferred format. That was an initial finding. And while we did research that option, that is not what we are proposing. So what we did is kind of go systematically and look at all of the options, present those options as considerations, get feedback from the public. And again, we realized that that's not an option. And we did survey six jurisdictions, six counties, Contra Costa, San Mateo, Santa Clara, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego. And only two of those counties offer standing Spanish only translation, and that's San Mateo and Los Angeles. So we've invested some time and energy and staff work into this, and we absolutely realize that we need to come up with a solution that is easily digestible and accessible to the public.
Sandra, you have 3 minutes.
Hey, thank you. I very much appreciate that you were able to take that feedback. We were kind of worried about the caption option. I think that is obviously not the best way to go. I appreciate that work has been done to figure out what is best. I am going to go ahead and advocate for standing translation at all of those meetings, because as the previous speaker said, the demographics of our community have been changing over the last 20, 30 years. And they're telling us that if we want to reach the people that live in these communities and have them attend the meetings, we're going to have that standing translation. I also want to echo the previous speaker, in my kind of shock at the price tag that you guys are quoting. I work as a community organizer and I have worked with lots of translators, and I have seen the range anywhere between like $50, $60 to about $100 an hour. Even if you have two translators at $100 an hour, you're still just looking at about $600, and that's like the most expensive I've seen. And so I would like to learn a little bit more about where that number of $1,000 is coming from. And maybe that would be the solution, is to maybe find someone that does a little, I don't want to say cheaper, but like a better price, because that price seems really outrageous to me. Just in my experience in working with different translators and different companies, that just seems extremely high. But I do, like I said, appreciate the work that is being put into this. And I'm really appreciative of the supervisors for taking the time and resources that it's going to that we need to take to have this be something that's going to be sustainable, that's going to actually work for our folks. So thank you very much for your time.
Charisita, you have 3 minutes.
Muy buenas tardes. Primero quiero agradecer por estar porque tenga traducción. Para mí es muy importante. Soy Teresita de Jesús, vivo en el área incorporada por más de 17 años, y para mí el expresar lo que mi comunidad necesita y lo que las necesidades tenemos, para mí eso es muy importante. Otra de las cosas que yo pienso que es muy importante, cuando uno llega a una reunión y no hay interpretación, te sientes cohibido, te sientes intimidado, te sientes que no eres parte de la reunión. Y sin embargo, cuando ofrecen interpretación, puedes sentir tus sentimientos, tus frustraciones, tus preocupaciones, puedes expresar tus necesidades. Muchas de nuestras comunidades no tienen acceso o no, no a la tecnología. Entonces, creo que en todas las reuniones debería haber, en las reuniones públicas del MAC, deberá de haber traducción. La verdad, yo agradezco mucho, mucho que ofrezcan traducción ahora, porque yo puedo expresar, como les digo, la voz de las personas que están dentro de mi grupo, mis mismas preocupaciones y mis necesidades también. Como ayer que fuimos desde las 8:30 a estar afuera con los supervisores, yo estaba emocionada porque yo quería estar de frente de ellos y expresar cuáles son las necesidades de nuestra comunidad. Desafortunadamente no tenían traducción en vivo. Me vine muy triste como a las 2:30 de la tarde y estuve con mi dedo, mano levantada, y desafortunadamente tampoco pude expresar por el poco tiempo que nos dieron. Entonces fue un día muy frustrado para mí, pero agradezco su trabajo y ojalá que tengamos traducción y en vivo y en todas las reuniones. Muchas gracias por su esfuerzo.
Clerk, are you there?
No more speakers, supervisor. Yes, yes, we can hear you. We heard the interpretation. I heard the interpretation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So did I.
So Laura, can you respond to the price? Can you give us some more information in terms of roughly $1,000? Is that something that we got three bids on, informal bids? I mean, what's it? How did you come up with that, or do you have any further information on that?
I do, and so this is a quote that we received from the current service provider. They're on the line now, and I don't want to, put any unnecessary attention on them. So we use a provider for which we currently have a contract. And as you know, if we do
have a contract with this provider?
Yes, they have been providing these services for these meetings for quite some time. So this is an existing contractor, since they have been providing services that received good feedback from the public. We reached out for to clarify, like, how much are we paying now? And if we did go with multiple meetings that are scheduled in advance, could we get a bulk discount? And we were provided with a somewhat, you know, relatively small discount, but a discount nonetheless. And that will put us anywhere between about $950 a meeting.
Okay. My understanding, wouldn't you have to do an informal bid?
Yes. Probably.
Okay, go ahead.
This might even be a, I was just reminded that there are three Castro Valley MAC meetings per month. So that would move the meeting number from 5 to 7. And that would mean that we'd go over the $25,000 threshold for requiring a competitive bid. So that means that we would have to go out for a competitive bid for these services. That process can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And but that may just be something that we have to do in order to get a competitive rate for these services.
Because I think we've got a couple of speakers who are saying they thought down at high, I would know that, but I think if it's going to put us over the threshold, then maybe we need to look at doing an informal bid. And I think that requires three bids or something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But again, with 7 meetings per month, with at that rate, we may be over the threshold that would even allow an informal bid. We might have to do a formal RFP.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, just asking based on the queries we got from the public on this matter. I think maybe if you can do some further examination of that, and until we get it resolved, obviously we're going to continue with what we have.
Correct.
Really, I like the fact that we're trying to expand it to all the MACs and the Unincorporated Services Committee for language access and interpretation. And ultimately, it would probably still be considered a pilot, I'm not sure. And because I think, as one speaker stated, it'd be good if we can get other meetings with language access, like the Board of Supervisors meetings, the Planning Commission, the East County and West County Board of Zoning Adjusters. So there are a number of other, I think, important bodies that probably need similar service. But right now, if we can get it going for the ones that you've identified on a pilot basis, that would at least get us making some progress. So some feedback. I think you're right. The board was supposed to have heard this yesterday, and we were supposed to have heard it back in August. But I apologize to the public. We've had so many important matters before us that we've unfortunately had to table this at the last two meetings when it was scheduled to be taken up. So hopefully we'll be able to take this up at our next meeting, and I believe it's scheduled for October the 11th. I think it's when we might take this up again, I believe. So I don't want people to think this is anything we feel that is not important, because I do feel it's important. But in the grand scheme of things, there's so many things that are important. It's like trying to triage. And trying to get to all of them and get to them in a reasonable amount of time with our limited availability. So once again, just apologize for that. Okay, so if there's no more comments on this matter, this is a standing item. So we'll see what Laura has to say when she reports to us in October. So let's go to item number 2, informational on hybrid meetings.
Yes. So just to give a brief recap, The board transitioned to hybrid meetings in April of this year. And some significant upgrades were made to the chamber's equipment to accommodate those meetings. And in order to have a successful hybrid meeting where people who attend virtually and in person have a similar meeting experience, each facility is required to have at minimum a camera, a microphone, speakers, a screen, an audiovisual interface, and a network or Wi-Fi suitable for hosting a virtual meeting. So our clerk board of supervisors and our information technology staff went out to survey several locations where meetings were previously held, unincorporated meetings were previously held, to assess to see if they were hybrid ready in their current state. They went to Castro Valley Library, San Lorenzo Library, the Sunol Glen Cafeteria, the Cherryland Community Center, the Community Development Agency Boardroom, and the Hayward Area Recreation District Building. And none of those locations had all of the necessary equipment to host a hybrid meeting. However, our information technology department developed a mobile kit that they can take around to different meeting locations to make those locations kind of temporarily hybrid ready until a decision is made on whether or not long-term audiovisual and technology upgrades are going to be made to these buildings. So IT finalized its mobile kit a few weeks ago, and this mobile kit is optimally used at the Castro Valley Library and the San Lorenzo Library. And the reason why those two locations were selected is because of the existing equipment's interface with the mobile kit and the layout of the room, the room size and the camera span, which are two really important components for hybrid meetings. So the recommendation that will go forth to the full board once we give an update is that we move forward with hybrid meetings at those two locations. Again, those two locations are Castro Valley Library and San Lorenzo Library. And a board policy would need to be made on whether or not hybrid meetings are standard going forward. And if this is a permanent part of how the county is going to conduct meetings, then some decisions need to be made on long-term investments in each one of the building locations to bring them up to, not up to code, but sufficient enough where they can hold a hybrid meeting. So the only exception to this, to these two kind of temporary locations is the Sunol Glen Cafeteria. They have made some significant upgrades to their audiovisual equipment that are underway, and they hope to finish those up within the next 2 weeks, at which time the county IT staff is gonna go out and review their upgrades because that location may be good to go on its own. But right now the recommendation is to move forward with hybrid meetings at two unincorporated locations and possibly three if Sunol Glen is, if they have their new equipment. And so again, those locations would be Castro Valley and San Lorenzo.
All right. So Supervisor Brown has any questions or comments?
No questions.
So, yeah, let me think here. I've got a couple of either questions or comments. First of all, I think it's unfortunate that we, and I'm saying the collective we, that includes me as well, we didn't have enough foresight to recognize hybrid meetings prior to the pandemic. Because if we had, and we built a new Cherryland Community Center, state-of-the-art, and not to have considered that a possibility, I think was a big oversight. And I just think nobody was anticipating reality and the new norm being hybrid. And I do think the new norm will be hybrid. The pandemic, COVID, coronavirus pandemic, indicated to us that we were just doing virtual meetings and we couldn't do in-person meetings. Then we were able to do virtual and in-person as a hybrid type format. And so I don't anticipate that we'll ever go back to just in-person without a possibility of a hybrid. And I do know in some cases, some meetings might just continue to be or might be offered as a virtual. So I just, once again, find it regrettable, and I'm not putting the blame on anyone's shoulders, that we just didn't have that foresight to make the Cherry Lane Community Center capable of accommodating hybrid meetings. Then my second statement, and this is more of a question, if the mobile equipment will be utilized at San Lorenzo and Castro Valley. So if the Eden area MAC and the Fairview MAC want to conduct a hybrid meeting, they would then have to choose one of those locations to accommodate their meeting, right?
Correct.
They choose the San Lorenzo Library or the Cache Valley Library to hold their meeting.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And let's see here. And suppose there were other meetings we wanted to hold in a hybrid format that were not the MAX or the unincorporated services. For instance, suppose we wanted to do like a hybrid town hall. Supervisor Brown and myself wanted to do a town hall. Would that be possible at one of those locations as well?
Yes. So with the mobile kit and the standard equipment that we have in the board chambers, we would have three locations suitable for hybrid meetings.
Okay, good. And then if the West County Board of Zoning Adjusters, if they want to do a hybrid meeting, then they could choose one of those locations to do that meeting at as well.
Correct.
Okay. And then when you talk to the full board, you're just looking to see if the board wants to establish a policy going forward that we will be offering hybrid meetings at minimally at these two locations. Is that kind of what I understand?
Yes, and also getting some direction on if hybrid meetings are here to stay. And okay. If so, then we need to work in conjunction with GSA and ITD on estimates for bringing all of those buildings up to speed so we don't have to only rely on two locations outside of the board chambers for hybrid meetings.
So let me just ask a question about that. So if we want to make that permanent, the option of using the mobile kits wouldn't be sufficient. We would have to make the Castro Valley site, the San Lorenzo site, and potentially other sites hybrid, functionality for hybrid. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So the mobile kit is a temporary solution. This is so that we can move forward with hybrid meetings as soon as October or November. This is not a long-term solution.
Okay. So if the board wants to make this permanent, would we be making Castro Valley and San Lorenzo and having GSA make those sites permanent for hybrid meetings?
Yes.
Saying so that yes. The mobile kit would no longer be utilized.
Correct.
And then if we wanted to have other sites like the Planning Commission chambers, the Office of Emergency Services, because I don't know if that's hybrid or not, but if we want to have other sites, we would identify the sites that we want to convert so that they could accommodate hybrid meetings in the future.
correct, and make those equipment, those audiovisual equipment upgrades at those individual facilities.
Okay, gotcha. So we'd have to identify the number of sites we're talking about. Okay. And then my last question. So the mobile kit is, why is it only temporary? I don't understand the mechanics associated with it.
It's very staff heavy. So now someone from IT has to come out to every meeting and set up this mobile kit. Someone from GSA has to come and kind of set up the room. Like the staff has to be on site instead of having the sites ready to go. Additional staff is needed. And this is, primarily overtime to come and take this kit and make it integrate and make sure that it works.
Okay. Thanks for explaining that. Okay. I understand better now because I'm not very tech savvy and I was just trying to understand. I thought, it was some little suitcase that you just carry in and then voila, you've got a hybrid meeting. But I see there's more associated with it.
There's a whole setup involved.
Yeah. Because you called it a mobile kit, and I'm thinking a little kit or something that you bring. Okay, I got you. So it's more than just a little kit. Okay. All right, I understand now. Okay, let's see if we have any speakers on this item.
And before we go to speaker, Supervisor, I want to add in one more thing. In addition, when I do update the board, there are some considerations and some recommendations that will be made as far as hybrid meeting procedures, like how many members of the meeting body need to be in person for this to be a hybrid meeting. Is it acceptable for one member to be in person? Do you need a quorum of the board? So some recommendations will be made at the work session so that we can have some consistent procedures on how these meetings are conducted.
Particularly when it's using this mobile kit, since it's staff heavy. You don't want to bring out the mobile kit, have all the staff set everything up, and have two people from the body show up, and then maybe three people from the public show up.
Correct.
Yeah, so we want to have some guidelines associated with the use of the mobile kit for a hybrid meeting.
Yes.
Gotcha. All right. Let's see if we have any speakers on this item.
Scott, you have 3 minutes. Please unmute.
I'm sorry, that was by accident. Apologize.
Okay. We have no speakers on this item.
Bring it back to the board. You have any final questions or comments, Supervisor Brown?
No, I don't.
All right. Okay, so thank you, Laura. Look forward to hearing this, hopefully both of these reports to the board, hopefully next month. So I thank you for the continuing update.
Thank you.
All right, have a pleasant evening. Okay, let's go to our next item. Item 3, the need for allocation of second tranche of American Rescue Plan, ARPA funds for the unincorporated area. An overview of community priorities. So I believe my voice is going to make a presentation of what they would like to have the board consider.
I'm bringing you Juliana and Leo.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Tisa. I think it is here. Yes.
Yes.
And we can share our screen, is that right?
Yes.
Great.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Second. I'm just going to load up my screen here. Hi, good evening, supervisors and everyone. My name is Leo Esclamado. I am the co-director of My Eden Voice, and I'm here with my colleague, Juliana Weiser-Leon. So we'll be presenting today. We're really happy to be back here to share our needs of our community in what started in 2020 as a call for budget transparency. And since then, we're really happy to be in constant dialogue with the county on our needs to work for an equitable recovery out of this pandemic. And this presentation is an update of our efforts and the ongoing needs for recovery. We're very happy, you know, My Eden Voice is our mission. We envision a community where we feel welcome and proud to live in, a place with economic prosperity, quality education, affordable housing, free of discrimination, and a healthy outdoor environment to walk and gather. We're happy to say our organization is 4 years strong as a grassroots group and to be a very strong advocate for the unincorporated area, and our membership is growing stronger. We're happy to announce our founding convention is upon us in October, and we've onboarded a new co-director since just this year. I'm going to get into our presentation. So some of this is review, but some of this, again, just paints the picture, right, just a snapshot of what our communities are going through. As you know, over half of our population is below 8% area median income and has a poverty rate of a quarter of our folks, being still one of the highest in the county. In October, a stat of last year, Eden area had 22% of the unemployment claims processed in Alameda County. And with recent point in time count, the unhoused population in our county increased more than half at 68%. And it's interesting, a fifth of those unhoused residents in the county report eviction and rent increase as a cause of being unhoused. And we are also finding, as another housing-related issue, unincorporated tenants are most likely to receive a threat of eviction than incorporated tenants in the county with those seeking legal services. And we've referred to this stat many times. You know, if our communities, our neighborhoods, we're incorporated, we would make up the fourth most populous city or the fourth largest city in the county at over 150,000 residents. So with that, you know, our needs for recovery out of this pandemic and really just out of the structural poverty that we're facing still persist. You know, our families are still recovering from the pandemic. And it's not just the pandemic, right? The pandemic was just years of investment really that can't be resolved in one round of federal investments. And our hope that this investment, you know, would combat what we call structural racism, and that this investment requires structural change. So it's like we see this, the initial investment as like our down payment for a new, you know, way of addressing structural equity in the county, which a lot of our families face. And we know that the county has fiduciary and municipal responsibility for the Eden area. So, we've heard that we're it, you know, the county is it and our main form of government for a lot of our families. This was a review. Many of you have seen this before, but it's a review that in the height of the pandemic 2020, we gathered a series of community listening sessions, about 14 different community listening sessions. And this was a summary of a lot of the themes of what we asked, you know, what residents most needed to recover in the pandemic, or what would they envision, want to see changes in their pandemic. So these were 8 really key categories. I'm not going to go in detail in most of them, but just as a snapshot, you know, for community reinvestment, we were talking about new ways of financial wealth building, right, in the community. For housing and asset building, we're talking about pathways to encourage homeownership, as well as how do we also figure out how to invest in a tenant education and legal services with those dealing with housing issues. In health, you know, there was a lot of priorities put in addressing a community mental health initiative, and it still continues to persist to this day. And in workforce and entrepreneurship was talking about more of like retraining and how do we, you know, retool a lot of education and job training, especially not only for the new economy, but at the same time with addressing the pandemic concerns, right, in 2020. So, you know, and yeah, so those were a little bit of snapshots of some of the themes that that came up in these as main priorities of investments. And our framework, you know, we hope that we've always advocated was that all of these investments address these buckets with culturally relevant practices, that they're linguistically just, right? They're accessible. It's integrated, right? That these you know, projects are connected and talking to each other. There's a way to evaluate, you know, from a qualitative and quantitative data standpoint of the effectiveness of all our investments, as well as, you know, how do we evaluate the equity of the investments? Like if distributions were equitably distributed, right? And sustainability focus, like do these investments go beyond just, you know, short-term recovery and, you know, towards like the structural change that we're hoping for in a community. And with that, I would want to transition to my colleague, Juliana, to talk about our district leadership responding to this.
Thank you, Leo. And supervisors, we wanted to make sure we took some time to thank you for your leadership. It's been a long time. It feels like we've just been in meetings for several years, just talking about ARPA funds, a couple of years now. And we appreciate your level of engagement with the community, the fact that you've heard some of these needs over and over. You've seen the buckets slide quite a lot, but we appreciate that you've taken the time to hear from the community and that it really has made a difference. We want to remember Supervisor Chan's commitment to allocate ARPA funds to the unincorporated areas of the county as if we were a city. When we heard that the first time, we were shocked, and we were so very grateful that this is where things were moving towards. And we know that, you know, it's all credit to Supervisor Chan and Supervisor Miley on that. We appreciate it. And the fact that both your offices directed CDA and the county administrator also directed CDA to engage, not only to distribute the funds, but to engage with the community to learn about the needs. So the RFP process was really a result of a lot of community engagement with not just with Might and Voice, but also with the Healthy Communities Collaborative, the basic needs group that meets regularly, and our local community groups. And we thank you very much for that very transparent process. Next slide, please, Leo. And we've seen the results. Contracts are being drawn up and during these weeks. We know that there's an opportunity for local groups to grow their capacity through some of the RFPs. We have an opportunity also to start housing legal services navigation, and that's something that our community has wanted for a very long time, and we're excited about that, what that's going to look like, especially because we know that it will be culturally competent and it will be dedicated to the unincorporated communities. We'll have some mainstream navigation support, which we know is something needed. And there's all these other things that have been funded, like food and case management and emergency support and access to basic needs and wellness. We're excited about our upcoming check cashing store and the opportunity to create, to have programs like Lending Circles, which are very culturally right for a community like ours. So we're looking forward to see what that looks like in the future. We haven't heard from Workforce Development. That RFP is not out yet, but we know that it's coming. The community has been engaged around it, and we're looking forward to seeing what that looks like as well. And we know that these investments really align with what we knew to be the needs of the community, what the community raised early on during the pandemic. Next slide, please. And yet, here we are again. We continue to talk about ARPA, and now it's the second tranche of ARPA funds, because we need to, we don't want to be late to the conversation. We really want our recovery to be at the center of the conversation. The unincorporated communities have suffered for long enough, and we want to make sure that we are thinking about what's next We really need a second round of funding from ARPA funds to not just sustain the work that is being done now, but to expand the work, to continue the vision of the community for recovery. And we know, we remember Supervisor Chan's commitment for a second set of funds. I was going through my notes from those early meetings with Supervisor Chan, and I think the figure she had proposed was $15.5 million for the second tranche of ARPA funds. And that's, you know, I think we think that's the least the county could do for the unincorporated communities. We hope and dream that it will be much more in the coming years, but we want to make sure that commitment is upheld. And we really, at the heart of it all, at the heart of our conversations with you and with the community, it's this idea of making sure that we don't do the same of the same and end up in the same place, but that we really promote equity with all investments, that we really think of a framework that's sustainable, that we think of all of those things that really encompass, and you saw that framework for investments that really fit this community. And so we want to ask you to uphold your commitments to invest in structural change for the unincorporated communities. We don't want one-time funds and we're gone, but we really want these funds to support structural change for our communities. Next slide, Leo. And we've talked a lot about what that looks like. We've seen the buckets, we've heard so many different ideas, and I think there's definitely an opportunity to engage more with the community around what other things are needed. But we also want to make sure that the programs that have been funded are sustained. We know that some of the capacity building work needs to continue well beyond that first set of funds from ARPA. We've heard a huge need, and I'm sure you have too, around a community mental health initiative that's culturally competent and that's accessible. Unfortunately, so many of our mental health providers are at beyond capacity. It's wait lists are very long. There's a lack of providers. There's just not enough providers. And there are other ways to address mental health needs. There are ways that, you know, like peer-to-peer counseling, and there's all these different formats that, you know, could really help the community have mental health supports. So we really hope that the next set of funds fund something like that, a community mental health initiative. And like we said, at the heart of our concern is structural change and equity. And we really think, we've heard from the community, that we want to make sure that someone is on top of things when it comes to unincorporated county and the investments that are made here. So we have heard from several other partners. We've been in these conversations around, can we have an unincorporated area manager one day? And so we wonder if this is a good opportunity. Can ARPA funds be used to explore this, to, you know, hire a consultant that could really tell us what it would look like, what it would cost to develop an unincorporated area office or a staff person at the CAO office that can oversee investments. And of course, the one thing we hear from the community, the many things we hear from the community, we really need continued rental assistance, repair funds, and other programs that address housing stability and that support also our unhoused communities. So with that, we just want to thank you for your support, and we want to ask you for your continued investment in these communities and for you to uphold that commitment made by Supervisor Chan and you, Supervisor Miley. And we also thank Supervisor Brown for the continued support to the unincorporated communities. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the presentation. Actually, I requested that my Eden Voice make this presentation to the Unincorporated Services Committee. So let me start with Supervisor Brown, see if he has any comments and or questions before I jump in there.
Thank you, Supervisor Miley. So I appreciate the presentation. I remember when Supervisor Chan made that pledge that we would look at the unincorporated community as one city. As a city, it's one. If it were a city, it's one of the largest cities in the county. Every city in the country that had a population of 50,000 or more got their own ARPA allocation in addition to what went to the county. And obviously, that incorporated area is far larger than 50,000. And when we looked at the model, the formula, the funding formula, if you look at population and need, it was $29 million is what unincorporated would have received. And her plan was, since we were doing two tranches, half the money we were giving out to begin with, and then the other half, this year or next, however the board is going to do that, she recommended $14 million the first year, and then it was going to be $15 million in year two. So I'm fully in support of that, and we'll advocate that the unincorporated area gets the resources that it deserves and that it would get if it were a city. I'm really appreciative of the process to help define the priorities, as well as the RFPs that went out to develop contracts and what have you. I think it's been a really good process. In fact, I really believe it's a great model for the county of how the community can work together with staff and come up with some innovative ideas and innovative proposals that will make a difference. So I want to thank CDA and thank My Eden Voice and other community partners for that. My daughter is having her 12th birthday party. She just turned 12. So I'm going to log off at this point. And I'm sorry to do that, but we're about to sing happy birthday. So I appreciate being able to listen into this presentation. And thank you, Supervisor Miley.
And happy birthday to your daughter, Supervisor Brown.
I'll let her know. Thank you. All right.
Okay. I wish, Supervisor Brown's daughter is having her birthday this evening, because I wanted to try to get a motion out of this committee tonight, but now that he's logged off, I can't have a committee of one give a motion, but I'm going to try to provide some direction here. So yes, Supervisor Chan was very much in communication with my office and myself around how the funding formula based on the cities for ARPA was being entertained, and that we should make sure that the unincorporated area received about $29-30 million, and that would break it down into the two tranches. So the first thing is, I think it's important that we fulfill that, that commitment and that understanding. Obviously, the other board members haven't signed on to that. I don't recall if Supervisor Chan ever voiced that publicly to the rest of the board when we were talking about the first round of ARPA funding. She may have, but I'm not sure. But the point is, we need to get a commitment from the Board of Supervisors that we will allocate out of the second ARPA funding tier an additional $15 million to the unincorporated area based on the funding formula that was established for cities. And I think that's the first thing. Then the second thing is to try to make sure that we have the process for determining the priorities and the criteria spelled out. And if the process that was followed in the past is a good one, that's great. If it needs to be tweaked and modified, that's fine. But we need to also have that publicly vetted, so that people understand what the process would be and what the priorities would be as well. That's important. And I don't necessarily think we need to tie the commitment of $15 million to the process just yet. I think first step is to get the commitment. The second step is the prioritization and the process. I think those are two separate things, and they're not necessarily tied together. And I think in terms of the priorities, you had a whole list of possible priorities. So how to determine what the priorities are, and then the criteria for selecting entities that potentially would receive funding in order to fulfill those priorities. And then one other thing, maybe even before we get to the priorities of coming up with either values or values might be the word, or might there might be another word, some principles, that might be it. Because Juliana, you mentioned like sustainability and investments that are going to carry forward. I think we might even want to come in before we get to priorities and get into criteria. Let's make sure we have what are the principles and the values that we're trying to look at in terms of the priorities and then the criteria. Because $15 million might seem like a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. You know, it can be spent in a year, it can be spent in 2 years, then it's gone. And so if one of the principles is we're looking for sustainability, then that's got to be carved into the priorities and carved into the selection process for awarding funding to any entity or entities that might receive this funding that the board has set aside for the unincorporated area. So I think it's going to be important to kind of come up with some principles. Now, if the principle of sustainability is not something that people are interested in, you can always let us know. But I like that. I like that principle that it, you know, we're trying to use this money that is going to leverage and create additional resources, and it's going to sustain in a corporate area. And maybe all of it doesn't have to be based on the principle of sustainability. Maybe 60% of it is. I don't know, but I think that's going to be important that we try to look at that as well. So I think getting the commitment is the first thing, maybe coming up with the principles and values, second thing, then coming up with the prioritization and the criteria for allocation and expenditure is the third thing, as I kind of would see it. Now, the Board of Supervisors, we are supposed to have heard, just like Laura was reporting in her last reports on language access and hybrid meetings, we're supposed to have heard information report on ARPA funding yesterday at our meeting. But, you know, I keep explaining to folks and apologizing for this. And I know you guys waited a long time to even get to the tenant protection matters. We have so many things coming across our plate and so many matters to attend to that this particular thing, ARPA, was supposed to be queued up and discussed at least as an information item yesterday. We didn't get to it. It was tabled. I'm hoping that the president of the board and the county administrator have it scheduled for it the next time we're supposed to have like a work session on October the 11th. I don't know what that agenda is for October 11th just yet, but you know, we can let folks know through my office and Supervisor Brown's office if ARPA will be discussed at that next board work session. Because the way the board operates, we have our regular board meetings, and that's where we take on matters that we're voting on. And then we have work sessions where we try to kind of think about stuff and hear reports and try to provide a direction, but we're not taking action. So what happened yesterday was a board work session where we heard stuff, but we weren't taking any, you know, voting on any action. I think if we're going to be taking up this ARPA on October the 11th, we want to make sure that this is my voice, your considerations are made known to the board. And so I would suggest, and we're going to hear from the public soon too, I would suggest that you send a letter to the Board of Supervisors and copy the county administrator, CC her, on your proposal and recommendations. And if Supervisor Brandon been able to stay in the meeting, I was going to try to get something official out of this committee, but I can't do that today because like I said, a supervisor can't come up with a motion for the entire, you know, to take to the full board. Now let me think here. Is there anything else? Oh, can you go back to your PowerPoint? At the beginning in your PowerPoint, you showed some concerns. And I just want to see that slide again.
Okay. Which specific?
The data or the following one supervisor?
It has increased more than families are receiving more. Was there another slide before that?
Sorry.
Okay, yeah, I think that's the slide there. Yeah, that slide. This, the PowerPoint that you presented today, is this being made available for the entire public? Can we get copies of this?
Yes, it's posted online on okay. the agenda.
Okay, great. Because I find some of this statistical information very interesting, that the Eden area had 22% of unemployment claims, 60% of the population is below 80% of the AMI, unhoused population has increased, unincorporated tenants are most likely to receive a threat of eviction. And okay, the last one, we all recognize that. So these particular data points that tell the story, I'd like to explore that a little further with my Eden voice. Not today, but if you're open to having a further conversations about this data, I'd really like to talk with you about that. Let's see. Then that fourth one too, about tenants are more likely to receive threats of eviction in the unincorporated area. I'd like to definitely delve more into that particular data point, because I need to understand this much more thoroughly. So if you're open to that, I'd like to do that.
And absolutely, then, Supervisor. Thank you for that, yes.
Okay, that'll help my understanding. And then I believe the only other thing I wanted to ask about, you mentioned your convention, your founding convention. When is that taking place? When is that gonna be held?
October 22nd, it's about 4 weeks.
October 22nd, is that a Saturday? Yeah, that's a can I get an invitation to attend? Is it okay? Is it going to be virtual, or in person, hybrid?
It'll be in person. Yes,
it's going to be in person.
It's going to be in person.
Yes, Supervisor, you're welcome. You're welcome to attend. It's a celebration, really. That's what we've been saying to community members. It's really quite an achievement. It's been a tough couple of years, and MEV has been working hard. So we'll have to celebrate.
I look at my voice sort of like as something that was envisioned, then you can appreciate this, Juliana, being a mother. It was envisioned, then it was conceived, then it was given birth. And so now it's beginning its development, and the convention is part of that process. So that's kind
of a lot of sleepless nights there at the beginning.
I don't know if Leo has kids. Yep. For those of us in particular,
Supervisor Miley, this is Dave. We're saying happy birthday, and I got a text saying that we are supposed to forward this to the full board, and I just wanted to let you know that I'm fully in support of that. So about forwarding this proposal to the board for the $29 million.
Okay, great. That's the main thing. I wanted to see if we could get a motion out of the committee that we afford to the full board. Our recommendation that the unincorporated area be allocated another $15 million ARPA funds.
Good, I'm fully in support of that.
Okay, great. That'll be the motion, great. That'll be official, thank you.
Supervisor, I also wanted to remind you that you had asked, and I think they are planning on presenting this at the Board Transportation and Planning Committee in November.
Yeah, great. Okay. You got a motion from two committees.
So that's been confirmed as well.
That's great. Okay, so this is the first motion. So we've got this committee approving that we want to have the unincorporated area get $15 million of the second round of ARPA funds. Supervisor Brown and I both support that. Okay, thank you. So back to the giving birth of my Eden voice, et cetera. So it's gonna be in person October the 22nd, And if I haven't received an invitation, I can attend, because I'd really would like to come in and observe if I could and share the moment. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Of course, you will get the formal invitation, but yes.
All right, so let's see here. I think we are now ready to open this up for public comments from anyone from the public.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes, Alina.
Hi, Supervisor Miley. My name is Alina Farouk, and I work at My Eden Voice with residents from the unincorporated communities. First, we would like to thank you for allocating the first tranche of ARPA funds for the unincorporated communities. This funding has provided a lot of opportunities for organizations and grassroots groups to continue providing for unincorporated families and for them to start on projects that would help solve some of the issues identified by our community residents. But the recovery is not over. We need the second round of ARPA dollars for our families and children. As Julieta mentioned, we need to continue the process county started to support projects that directly promote equity. There are many great projects that did not get funded from the first round, and our communities are still struggling with mental health, housing stability, and more. We're asking you to honor your commitment to us and continue to invest in unincorporated communities. Thank you for your leadership in investing in the future of our families. Our communities need continued investment to recover. Thank you. And
caller, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes, Charles. Charles, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes.
Hi there. How are you doing? Good evening, Supervisor Miley. You've heard me advocate for further funding for ARPA, as well as other things for the unincorporated area. And you threw out there, you're looking for guiding principles on this beyond sustainability. I would suggest that we're thinking of bringing the Eden area residents and community and environment up to its potential, which has been up till now unrealized. This is a fabulous area that's been neglected. When I think back of all the buckets that we created with My Eden Voice, all the need that is still out there, all the stuff that hasn't even been touched, like I've heard discussion of a family resource center for Hayward Acres. Hayward Acres has been impenetrable. This would be a great thing. I just see so much need and so much opportunity here, as I have ever since I moved in many, many years ago. I want to continue to see it grow. And I think even though I know $15 million is really small change, we need it. So I appreciate your I really appreciate your motion you've just done with Supervisor Brown, because that's the direction we want to go. Thank you.
It's Brianne.
Hi, Supervisor Riley. It's Brianne. Well, I had my whole public comment ready, but I suppose you and Supervisor Brown already passed this, and I want to just say thank you for that. I was actually thinking of coming here more wearing the hat of chairing the Ashland Sherryland Basic Needs Committee the past 2.5 years. And for those of you less familiar, this is really a collaboration of a lot of the different county agencies, and I think, you know, even more importantly, all of the different CBOs working in the unincorporated community with a focus on Ashland and Sherryland. And we've been really focused on the pandemic recovery and how we can best support the community the last few years. And we had a long discussion about ARPA II funding, and I think folks really felt in support of this direction that we really need to our carve out for the unincorporated communities. But I also, you know that we have spent the last 2 years on the ground in these neighborhoods, and really besides tenant protections and rental assistance issues, the biggest issues that we've been talking about and really I think wanting to do more about is the community mental health issues that we're hearing in the community. And I think we're really finding that a lot of the behavioral health resources in the county often go to the most extreme cases or, you know, there to really serve our unhoused neighbors. But we know that mental health issues abound in our neighborhoods, and using this funding to really find some creative solutions or to really fund something at the community level would really be in line with, I think, what we're all hearing on the ground and what the Basic Needs Committee has been talking about a lot the last couple of years. So really just want to also speak in favor of that idea and that direction. And also just really want to say thank you to Michelle Sterrett and to the CDA staff, who I think really tried in the last ARPA process to hear us and to hear the community and to hear all the CDOs and tried to run, I think, a more authentic and genuine process for how we distributed those funds. And so really appreciate that and hope we can do something similar this next round. So thank you for that.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes, Dave. Unmute your microphone, Dave.
Sorry. This is Dave Thompson. I am a new staff member with My Eden Voice, co-directing along with Leo, and also a resident in Oakland in Supervisor Carson's district. And just want to say thank you to you, Supervisor Miley, for your leadership in carrying on this work, along with Supervisor Brown and his predecessor, Supervisor Chan. I spent a lot of years working in Contra Costa County in unincorporated and in cities there, and haven't seen the type of participatory process that you all have engaged in with the first round of ARPA. And I'm super excited about how that can continue with the second round. Supervisor Miley, you mentioned having a set of principles, and I'd like to remind you of the equity principles that we, My Eden Voice, proposed prior to the first round of funding. And so I would ask you to consider to look at those as a way to guide the work going forward. And then lastly, I'd say bienvenido, welcome to our founding convention. I wasn't a part of the conception and the labor of the project, but I'm excited to be a part of the ongoing growth. And we are committed to helping continue the participatory nature of the way ARPA funding is committed to the community. Thank you.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 3 minutes, Teresita.
Muy buenas noches, Teresita de Jesús. Soy miembro activo de My Eden Voice y Inquilinos Unidos. Bueno, gracias por la primera ronda. Primeramente, ha sido de mucha ayuda a nuestra comunidad porque sabemos que nuestra comunidad tiene muchas y muchas necesidades. Otra de las cosas que me gustaría que aparte de la necesidad de comentar, estoy de acuerdo con Chas, necesita Hayward Aircrest un centro comunitario. Nosotros tampoco tenemos un centro comunitario de recursos. Sería muy buena idea que dentro del área de Sherryland, Ashland, tenemos muchos edificios, tenemos mucha gente de la tercera edad, necesitamos un centro comunitario, tal vez por la 14, en algún lugar desocupado, donde nuestros ancianos tengan una oportunidad de hacer alguna actividad, que los lleven a algún lugar. Tenemos muchos ancianos que andan afuera, señoras que a veces se quedan afuera del Rich haciendo actividades. Yo creo que hay que honrar a todos estos ancianos, y también me gustaría que parte de, que ojalá que usted, se apruebe la segunda ronda, también se ayude para la salud mental de los estudiantes. Necesitamos estudiantes, no me gusta volver a decir la palabra pandemia porque ya quisiera borrarla de mi mente, pero desafortunadamente tenemos mucha salud mental con nuestros estudiantes, sobre todo en esta edad que los ataca en los medios sociales, todo la transición de las escuelas, el ambiente. Necesitamos mucha ayuda en salud mental para nuestras escuelas, actividades para nuestros estudiantes, más dinero que entre en deportes. Necesitamos a nuestros estudiantes mantenerlos ocupados para que eso les ayude a no buscar refugios en las drogas y en el alcohol. Necesitamos crear una comunidad con estudiantes muy fuertes y con muchas herramientas. También me gustaría que las mismas personas que son voluntarias, que viven en el área incorporada, sean beneficiadas, trabajen en estos mismos recursos. Y tenemos muchas mamás que no tienen trabajo o son amas de casa que dicen, pues yo me estoy cuidando los niños y mi marido tiene doble trabajo. Entonces, a esas mamás en sus tiempos libres deberíamos de darles trabajo, oportunidad, que sean beneficiadas todas nuestras familias del área incorporada. Muchísimas gracias, supervisor, y lo esperamos en la convención. Muy amable y gracias por su apoyo.
No more speakers, supervisor.
Okay, well, thank the speakers for their comments this evening. And let me just respond to a few of the comments. The last speaker talked about a community center in Cherryland. I'm kind of perplexed because the county just spent over $20 million, close to $25 million, if I recall correctly, on building the Cherryland Community Center.
I think she meant Ashland, Supervisor, because she was referencing East 14th. On that other side. Teresita lives in Ashland.
A community center for Ashland. Okay. Yeah. I think we did one in Cherryland. And if that's not providing the needs of the community, then I need to further investigate that. And then in Ashland, I don't know if the county has the resources to build another community center. I know there's the Ashland Community Center. I don't know what Hart plans on usually using that facility for. And I know Hart is in some conversations with RCD and DSAL. So there might be ways of accommodating what the speaker was asking for in terms of a community center through what DSAL and RCD and Hart are contemplating. But if not, then we could further explore that. But I do think the strongest avenue to achieve that might be through what is being contemplated with HARD at DSAL and RCD. Then in terms of mental health, yeah, that's been something I've prioritized through my office this year, and I've been trying to push that agenda for the last couple of years. The county has a forensic, that's what they call it, a forensic community mental health plan. This forensic community mental health plan has not been fully implemented countywide. It's been a big frustration of mine. And this, when the board passed the budget for this fiscal year, I was able to get the board to approve that we would have the county administrator come back to the board in January or February of next year with a plan to fully implement the forensic community mental health plan. And this would help not just the unincorporated area, but other parts of Alameda County that are in need of mental health services as well. Because I know mental health services isn't just restricted to 9 to 5, and it's not just restricted to one part of the county. Mental health services needs to be 24/7 countywide. And that's what our forensic community mental health plan would do. And potentially, if we allocated some of the funds from the ARPA bucket that would go to the unincorporated area for this purpose, that could maybe help to leverage the use of additional resources that the county is going to be using to fully implement the forensic community health plan. There's a good possibility that maybe we'll be able to do it even without the ARPA funds that might be allocated to the unincorporated area. But I'm really pleased to hear that that's something, and I saw Juliana made it part of her presentation, and also Brianne spoke to it as well, because that is something that I think is very important. And, you know, recently the governor did sign the legislation for care courts. What that means is that Alameda County is not the first tranche of counties that will have to implement care courts. We'll be in the second round, and we'll have to implement it by the end of December of 2024. And what that means is that people who are identified by first responders and other appropriate officials will have to go into mandatory compulsory treatment through a court procedure. And they would get a mental health plan for a year or 2 years so that their lives would become stabilized, and they'd be in facilities, housing facilities, to help them get stabilized as well. So that's part of what's coming in the very near future. And that legislation was just signed by the governor a couple of weeks ago, care courts. And then let me see here. I think it, in terms of the principles, at the moment, I'm not weighing in on what the principles should be, but I'm just saying we probably should have some definable principles that we want to utilize to determine what the priorities are and what the criteria for funding would be. So I think if my voice, if your equity principles, if that's what you want to push, fine. If you have other principles that would encompass the equity principles, that's fine. I think we definitely need to have a set of principles that the Board of Supervisors would agree to in terms of the allocation of the resources, the ARPA resources. But as I said, I don't think we need to decide on that at the moment. I think the important thing is to get the money set aside for the unincorporated area, that $15 million. But I would encourage my voice and anyone else in the community for that matter to give us your recommendations on what you think the principles should be. And then let's see, the last thing, I'm looking at my notes here, back on the My Voice convention. Yes, I think some of you know, before I was an elected official, I was a community organizer back in the 1970s and 80s. And I actually have developed a number of community organizations. So I know kind of the stages of community organizations. So I know My Voice is kind of in the first stage of its, you know, of its development. And this convention, this founding convention, is part of that initial stage. So I definitely, that's why I'm just eager to see My Voice, because I really feel a sense of pride in My Voice coming about, because I've seen when I was elected, we didn't have strong community voices, organized community voices. And now My Voice represents a strong organized community voice, an authentic community voice that represents the Eaton area, which I think was really, really needed. And so I'm very pleased that that's in place to continue to ensure a sense of accountability from your, you know, from your government, from the public sector, be it the county, special districts, or whoever it might be that you're trying to hold accountable through the voice of the community. And then, as Brianne pointed out, the other piece of this, I'm just really pleased that we have in place the Ashland Cherryland Healthy Communities Collaborative with the community-based organizations working to help buttress the unincorporated area. Because I know also when I started in office, we didn't have any strong community-based organizations. I saw them in Oakland, but I didn't see any in the unincorporated area. And I think now we have some very strong community-based organizations like RCD. They've been in the community now for about 10 years. DSAL, they've developed and become very strong, to name, you know, to name two. But we have La Clinica at the Reach Center. They're there, and Diversio has always been their facility as well. So just to name some, but I know there's a lot more that are involved through the Ashland Cherryland Healthy Communities Collaborative. So I think all of that helps us move the agenda towards helping the unincorporated area become much more of a resilient community. And trust me, that journey is never over. It's never over. And I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but you know, I've lived in Oakland for a long time, and I've seen Oakland kind of ebb and flow. And right now it's, you know, we had another shooting today in Oakland at a school, near a school. So the work is never ending. So I just want to make that commentary. So I think that's all I have to say at this time on the comments I heard from the speakers. So I don't know if Leo or Giuliano want to wrap anything else up before I go to public comment on non-agenda items.
Just thank you, Supervisor, on my end, and appreciate your commitment and the long history you have working in this county. And I'm sure you've seen a lot of things, and we're just really excited to see the work in the community and how, you know, we're in this place, and looking forward to seeing it and looking back in a few years and seeing everything that's been accomplished in the unincorporated area. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I know Leo, were you going to say anything?
Oh, no, just likewise. Yes, thank you so much for the investment and continued commitment to provide.
Yeah. And I just want to comment, too, on the one other thing you had in one of your slides, the an unincorporated area manager or an office of unincorporated area services that is in the county administrator's office. You know, that's something that's come up in the past. It came up through the Eden Area Livability Initiative, phase one, and it's been a constant sort of a concern. And I know in your slide presentation, you wanted to see if ARPA funds would be, if we could use ARPA funds to explore this. I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't even know if that would be a good use for ARPA funds. So I'm not saying it wouldn't be, but I just don't know at the moment. But clearly, I think my voice should continue to push that, you know, that agenda. Because I do think it would be very important if the county could set up an office of unincorporated services out of the county administrator's office and have minimally a staff person or two who would be assigned to that, because it is, you know, as Leo pointed out in his presentation, incorporated area, fourth largest city, 150,000 people. And not to have that type of strong structure in place, because if you were a city, you'd have a mayor, city council, city manager, city attorney, you know, departments, you know, you have the whole structure of government, and you don't have that. So I think having an office of unincorporated services and a manager there, and it doesn't have to be a lot of staff, I think two or three staff could be sufficient, I think would also help to provide our ability to better accommodate the needs of the unincorporated area. And I'm not saying the supervisors aren't, you know, capable and our offices aren't doing what we can do, but I think having that office in the county administrator's office would also help to buttress our ability to deliver to, you know, deliver services to the unincorporated area. So I just want to co-sign that and speak to that as well. Okay, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today. This was our last agenda item. Let me see if there's public comment on non-agenda items for tonight.
No speakers for public comment.
Yeah, I'll wait just a few minutes to see if anybody is late to the mute button. Okay, going once, going twice. All right, we are going to adjourn the Unincorporated Services meeting for September 28th. Everybody stay safe and be well. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.